Good morning, I'm Holly Howard from the California STD Control Program, and my talk today is called The Power of the Pop-Up, and we're going to talk about how one simple clinic systems level, and I'm going to emphasize the word systems, intervention increased chlamydia and gonorrhea retesting rates. So just really quick background, many of you know this already. Reinfections with chlamydia and gonorrhea are very common, and they're associated with an increased risk of reproductive health outcomes in women, especially much higher rates of PID and ectopic pregnancy. Further retesting a woman a few months after she's treated for a chlamydia or gonorrhea infection can detect reinfections earlier, which then prevents her from developing these dangerous complications. And for these reasons, CDC has recommended chlamydia and gonorrhea retesting for over 10 years, with the latest guidelines specifying that retesting should occur approximately 3 months after treatment and that it should be a priority for providers. Yet in spite of the evidence and the recommendations, retesting rates remain very low in most clinical settings across the nation. These are recent retesting rates among a subset of female clients in FamilyPact, which is California's largest family planning program, providing free comprehensive reproductive health services to about 2 million low-income women and men annually. And you can see that there's been very little change in these retesting rates over time. And I just want to make a note that although the recommendation is approximately 3 months, in California, we measure retesting rates using a target time period of 1 to 6 months post-treatment in order to allow for a more liberal measurement that includes both earlier months when reinfection risk from an untreated partner is highest and some later months when reinfection from a new partner may be more likely. In order to understand where to focus our efforts, we found that just looking at overall retesting rates wasn't informative enough. And we really needed to get to the heart of the problem and break these rates down to look both at the proportion of the patients who were returning to the clinics during their target retest window, where low rates would indicate a need for patient-level interventions, and also looking at the proportion of those returning patients who were retested by the clinic, where low rates would indicate to us that direct clinic-level interventions were needed. So these are data also from FamilyPact that showed us that 62% of patients, these are female patients, returned to clinic during their retest window, yet almost a third were not retested, demonstrating a significant missed opportunity for retesting on the side of the clinics. So as a result of these findings and a nice grant from OPA, we designed a study called the InTouch Chlamydia and Gonorrhea Retesting Improvement Study to include two phases of interventions. The first focused on clinic-level interventions, and the second focused on patient-level interventions. The clinic intervention phase was launched in November 2010, and the patient intervention phase was just launched in November 2011. And the study is still in progress, and the talk today is going to just focus on the preliminary results we have from the clinic-level intervention phase only. The InTouch study was launched in 6 family planning Title 10 clinics from 2 delegate agencies. The clinics are all fairly large in size and geographically diverse across California. Inclusion criteria for study participants are female patients who are age 16 or older with a laboratory-confirmed infection with chlamydia and or gonorrhea from one of our 6 study clinics. Patients who were pregnant on the date of their positive test or who did not speak either English or Spanish due to some limitations in study materials had to be excluded in the analysis. And with the objective of helping clinics reduce their missed opportunities for retesting their returning patients, we evaluated existing agency protocols and electronic systems to see where we could affect change higher up at the systems level. And this led us to launch a 4-part intervention emphasizing automated electronic retest reminders, or pop-ups, that would identify retest patients at check-in. We also initiated a chlamydia and gonorrhea screening and retesting risk assessment protocol at intake called All Women, All Ages, All Visits, using a risk assessment card with 4 simple questions on it that we gave to all staff, and we've Velcroed, actually, to every intake computer at every clinic. We also ensured that sites had drop-in visits options available for STD patients so that patients didn't require appointments for their retests, and to further facilitate retesting at all visit types, we ensured that protocols were in place to allow all levels of clinic staff to accept chlamydia and gonorrhea specimens from patients. Okay, so the way that these pop-ups worked, actually the electronic medical records, or EMRs, that were used by our study agencies had only really passive follow-up mechanisms available, requiring that staff remember to look in certain patient record screens in order to determine if a follow-up service, like a retest, was needed. So our pop-up reminders were actually scheduled using the agency's electronic billing systems, which had a pop-up option previously only used for non-clinical issues, like alerting staff that there was an overdue medical bill. So each clinic already had designated STD follow-up staff who were responsible for ensuring that STD patients were treated. And these same staff were the ones who then would schedule a patient's retest reminder at the same time that her treatment was confirmed and logged. The pop-up stated that the patient was due for CTGC retest after, and then they gave the date that was 1 month after the patient's retest, patient's treatment date. Staff at these clinics still counsel patients to return at 3 months. However, opportunistic retesting will occur at these clinics whenever the patient next comes back, as long as it's 4 weeks after her treatment. Because the same internal billing systems were used across all of the clinics in each of our two study agencies, the pop-ups that were scheduled just in our six study clinics actually alerted front office staff when the patient checked in at any clinic within the agencies for her next visit. Upon seeing the pop-up and confirming that the visit was after the date indicated, front staff flagged the patient's visit form to alert back office staff that the patient was due for a retest on that day, and then pop-ups were expired after a patient's retest was performed. So really quick, to give you a sense of how we performed this analysis, to evaluate the impact of our interventions, we used two data sets from the clinical agencies, a laboratory data set that included all chlamydia and gonorrhea positive female patients with patient ID numbers and dates of services from limited to just our six study clinics, and clinical encounter data sets, which included all procedure codes with dates of services for each and all for all the patient ID numbers that were in the lab database. And the clinical encounter data actually was for the entire two agencies, which were 49 clinics in total. For our outcome measures for all positive tests from eligible patients, we looked at first just the overall retesting rate, defined as the proportion of patients who were retested. We looked at the patient return rates, or the proportion of patients who returned to clinic during their target retest window. And then we looked at retesting rates specifically just among those returning patients. Retesting and patient return rates were defined by a time period of 1 to 6 months, or specifically 31 to 180 days post-positive test date. Data from the first 4 weeks post-test were excluded. And for this preliminary analysis, the patient's positive test date was used for a proxy for her treatment date. And then clinic return and retesting rates were determined by matching the unique patient ID numbers and the dates of services from the eligible positive tests in our lab data sets to the clinical encounter data. So InTouch is a cohort study. And to evaluate whether the interventions worked in a particular setting and overall, we compared results between cohorts within each clinic, within each agency, and across all patients. Due to the small numbers still at this point in the study, significance isn't expected yet to be able to be determined at the clinic level. So all study patients were categorized by clinic site into two cohorts depending on the dates of their test. The historical cohort, which was our control phase, included all eligible patient tests that were performed between January 2008 and the date that that clinic rolled out the first part of our study interventions. A number of clinics actually decided to roll out some interventions early, before our actual study launch, which we encouraged, and so we had to cut off the historical period of time at that earlier date in that case. As study sites transitioned from paper to electronic medical records during the 18 months prior to our study launch, we did stratify our historical results to compare pre- and post-EMR launch. And then the study cohort began at each clinic on the date the full study was launched, with all interventions in place, which occurred in about November of 2010. And it ended for this preliminary analysis early enough to make sure that we had 6 months of encounter data post-test to analyze. And then we excluded that messy gray interim period at each clinic where some but not all of the interventions were initiated. There were about 6,500 chlamydia and or gonorrhea positive tests from eligible patients in our lab data set. Just under 3,000 of these were assigned to the historical cohort, and 1,930 were in the study cohort, and we excluded the 1,800 or so tests that occurred in the interim phase where only partial interventions were instituted. Really quick, looking at age and race data, this is our age data. 36% of the overall patients in the study were ages 16 to 19, and almost half were 20 to 25, and very small percentages were over age 25. 36% of the overall patients were Hispanic, about a quarter were black, 16% were white, 4% Asian or Pacific Islander, 13% were other or mixed, and there was a small percentage of missing age and race data as well. Okay, so looking at our primary outcomes, first for the historical cohort, the overall retesting rates before the study was 43% at the first agency, 31% at the second, and 35% across all patients. So this was our baseline. And just very quickly, juxtaposing the patient return rates next to the overall retesting rates during the same time period demonstrates that not all returning patients were being retested at these sites, again highlighting the same missed opportunities for retesting that we had seen previously. The patient return rate was 55% at the first agency, 48% at the second, and 50% overall. We stratified all historical outcome measures to compare the pre- and post-EMR intervals, as I mentioned, and we actually found no significant difference between the two, so data across both were combined. Comparing the patient return rates before and after our study interventions, the study cohort in the pink there, you saw that the patient return rates really didn't have any difference between before and after our intervention. These were interventions focused on clinic retesting rates, not yet on patients. All right, so we're getting to the money shot here. To evaluate whether our pop-up intervention was successful, we really focused on the retesting rates among those patients who had returned to clinic, and these are our historical data. The proportion of returning patients who were retested varied greatly by clinic, as you can see, and ranged from about 65% to 83%. There's a significant difference in these baseline rates between our two study agencies, with the first retesting an average of about 78% of returning clients, and the second only 65%. The overall retesting rate among all patients was 70%. So our goal was to increase these rates significantly. This slide shows a comparison now with the historical versus the study cohorts. And you can see that the rates jumped in all clinics, climbed to between 84 and 90% in all sites except for one, though even in that one site, the range still jumped 11 points from 67 to 78%. These increases were significant across each agency individually, and there was enough power to detect significance in both study clinics, even within agency two, where patient numbers were higher and the baseline rates started lower. So there's a bigger difference there to measure. Across all patients overall, the rate increased by 23% between the historical and study cohorts, jumped from 70 to 86%. Really quickly, because I love these slides, I just wanted to highlight our results from the opposite angle, which I think better demonstrates the clinical gap we aim to close, the proportion of returning patients who are missed. This is our historical cohort where 50% of patients returned, and you can see almost a third were not tested. And just so keeping your eye on that green pie chart, this is what happened after our intervention, where we were able to reduce this gap down to 14%, which was a 58% reduction overall. I just love doing this. Our Pac-Man, the pie chart is actually taking a bite out of that gap. Overall retesting rates, which accounted for both the subtle variations in patient return rates over time and the increases in retesting rates among returning patients, so both of those two factors, showed significant increases across all patients. It jumped from 35 to 44%, and significant increases in agency two, where the rates jumped from 31 to 43%. In agency one, where there were some changes in patient return rates at the same time, overall rates did not show an increase. So in summary of our key findings, the pop-up retest reminders were highly successful in significantly increasing retesting rates. They increased retesting rate among returning patients by 23% and decreased the percentage of missed opportunities by 58%. They raised the retesting rate among returning patients in every site to between 78 and 90% regardless of pre-intervention levels. And absolute increases varied by clinic and ranged from about 7 to 23 percentage points, with the most dramatic improvements observed in the clinics with the lowest pre-intervention rates. And at the end, they significantly raised the overall retesting rate across all study patients by 26%, though this increase was not universal across agencies. All right, implications, almost done. The implications of these findings for clinical programs are that simple chart flags have the capacity to improve overall retesting rates by reducing missed opportunities for retesting patients who return to clinic for any reason during their target retest window. And in general, these findings demonstrate how clinic systems level interventions may have more consistent impact on improving clinical services, as they do not rely on either the patient's initiative in requesting the service or in the clinician's capacity to really reliably remember all recommended follow-up protocols. There are, as always, limitations to our findings. Possible missing clinical encounter data may have underestimated overall patient return and retesting rates. Any clinic return and retesting occurring in clinics outside of our two agencies wouldn't have been captured, which would also have underestimated overall rates. And of course, these results might not be generalizable to all study clinics. We're grateful to be collaborating on the study with outstanding partners, our colleagues at the California Family Health Council, the Title X grantee organization for the state of California, and our close partners in the Infertility Prevention Project have consulted on all clinical aspects of the study. Our two Planned Parenthood affiliates who are serving as our study co-agencies, PHFE, who managed the grant, and a special thanks to the Office of Population Affairs, who thought our ideas for retesting interventions were important and promising enough to fund them with the Title X Service Delivery Improvement Grant. Thanks. I just want to say we have a best practices document that we developed in California, best practices for the prevention and early detection of repeat chlamydia and gonorrhea infections, and it's focused on both really feasible things you can do in a clinic to affect partner treatment and retesting rates, and I'll have a few of these up here.
We have time for a couple of questions.
Carla from Indiana. I have a question as to whether you were able to separate whether it was the pop-up itself or the other, it seems like, changes for this population versus others with not needing an appointment and anybody being able to collect the specimens, and maybe were those possibly the things that improved the rates?
Yeah, when we were designing the intervention and doing some key informant interviews, we had basic criteria that we needed each clinic to have. But these were Planned Parenthood agencies that had really high-quality services in general. And they had already rolled out and allowed just recently had started screening even at pregnancy tests and EC visits sort of routinely. And so they'd already rolled out procedures that allowed all staff to collect. So that was, you didn't see a lot of change in that particular procedure. And they already had walk-in visits in general. And we were just sort of ensuring that that was part of what they offered. We know in other sites these might not be available. So really the biggest change that we affected at these sites was the pop-up, and they said that as well.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Really exciting findings, so congratulations.
Thanks.
On that. The question I have is beyond the sort of the larger data collection that the study helped to facilitate, do the individual health centers have systems in place to monitor this on an ongoing basis?
Yes, that's an excellent question. And we actually, in California, the California Family Health Council has a centralized data system where we actually are now collecting, for their Title X clinics to get their FPAR data, and we're actually now collecting our IPP data through that system. And we're able, in fact, just as of last week now, we are able to actually use those data to look at patient return rates and retesting rates among returning patients for all of those agencies in that system. Neither of these agencies are in that system yet. They're all moving towards that. They will be mapped into that system very shortly. In fact, one of the Marmonte is the largest Planned Parenthood affiliate in the nation. There's 35 clinics, and they, after having to go through the whole process of abstracting their data for the study, I said, you know, if you're part of the CDS, we could have just got it from their system. So I think they're going to actually move forward really quickly to try to get into the system.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. I think we're going to have to
I'm sorry. Can you just say that
move on?
what kind of EMR system these people had, because I think it's pretty relevant that it was NextGen.
Yeah, so both of these big Planned Parenthoods had NextGen, and my understanding is that all Planned Parenthood affiliates across the nation are going to have one of two EMR and billing systems. It was really the billing system. But I mean, one of the implications here is that the actual EMR system did not have any active follow-up screens. And that's something that these systems absolutely should have. You had to click into a screen to remember to look and, like, scan everything to see if she was due for something. And then they did something where they had a little thing in the corner that would be red if she was due. I mean, and the clinic staff said they just still miss that all the time. And so this feedback to NextGen and other big companies that have these EMR systems is that we really need something that's much more active that people can't ignore. That's a really good point. Thank you.
Thank you.
One more point.
Yeah. I go out and do the site visits for Title 10 in California, and we've seen that most clinics have some kind of billing system that has the capacity to do these pop-ups. So it's not their EMR that we're looking at being
right.
able to help us. It's the billing system. And FQHCs, county health departments, reliably all have some kind of pop-up in their billing system. You just have to ask them, and it's usually the front desk person that knows that this exists.
And just one last point. We would assume that this would also work for paper. In fact, we went in trying to get some paper, you know, chart system. We tried to get clinics that had both so that we could show that, you know, putting a big laminated card that's bright colored into a chart is also, you can't ignore it. You open the chart up at the front desk when she's here and it says she's due for a retest, you know, big purple card or something. But all of these sites that we were working with were moving on to EMR. So it turned out we ended up doing all electronic systems with them. But we hope to replicate this with paper charts and different kinds.
Okay. Thank you. Uh-huh.